So you talked a little bit about when the Fed should begin to raise interest rates, but what about asset purchases? Should they restart asset purchases at this point, given what we're seeing in the economy?
So that's a good question. You know, I think back over the evolution of the data flow over the past 6 months, really almost 8 months now, we really started to see a decline in market-based measures, inflation expectations in the second half of last year. So if you look back to the FOMC statement in July of 2014, you had removed the statement that had, the sentence that had appeared earlier in the statement, which was that inflation expectations were remaining stable. And that's because of the downward movement in market-based measures, inflation expectations. That downward movement had continued. So in October, I descended. And it's because of my concern that our failure to respond to low inflation was leading to a risk of loss of credibility. The data flow, unfortunately, has continued in a downward direction. In December, I descended over essentially the same reason that, because I saw the risk as having become more pronounced on this dimension. And I went then. No longer a voting member of the committee, but since the beginning of this year, I think again we've seen even further reductions in market-based measures, inflation expectations. Which it's not a random event. It has to be seen in the context of the FOMC letting inflation run below target for over 2.5 years. Core inflation has been below target for really close to 7 years, maybe a couple months of being above 2%. A failure to respond to this, I think, really leads to creating undue risks of a loss of credibility. And a loss of credibility will be very challenging for us to deal with. You look at what's happening in Europe, what's happening in Japan, what's happening in Sweden. All over the world, you see the same disinflationary forces, and we're not taking action. So what kind of action should we take? And this finally leads me back to your question, which is I think we should announce that we should be keeping interest rates low at least until the 1 to 2 year ahead outlook for inflation is back to 2%. So we can say in the statement that the 1 to 2 year ahead outlook for inflation is that it will return to 2% until market-based measures, inflation expectations have returned to normal ranges. And I would say that's an important step for us to be doing that, but it's still a little passive. You know, the question then would be, suppose that doesn't work. And if we didn't see inflation, and after we get through the near-term effects of the oil price changes, and I understand that, but once we get through that, if we haven't starting to see inflation go back to target after we've made these statements and these commitments, then I think we should be reconsidering asset purchases, yes.
Given what you've said about the credibility of the 2% inflation target, do you think the FOMC is really aiming at that now, or are they aiming somewhere lower and we just don't know that?
Well, I'm on the FOMC, so I guess I should know the answer to that. No, the FOMC is aiming at 2%. I think that absolutely, you know, and that's definitely the goal of the committee. I think I think it's not enough to have a goal. You have to live up to the goal. It's what I said in the speech today that, you know, you can assert you have a goal, but for us it's not enough to have a goal. You have to have everyone believe that you have that goal. And if you start to have inflation run as low as it has for as long as it has, you're going to create doubt. And that's what we mean by loss of credibility is when people start to doubt what that target is. The problem is that once that happens, once you have significant loss of credibility on the downside, central banks around the world have been experiencing this, and it's very challenging to resurrect those expectations, to bring them back up. We know how to do it, although it's hard to bring them back down if they go up too high. This is what Paul Volcker was able to do in the early 80s in the United States. Very costly, you know, large unemployment. But you look at bring them back up from low levels, you know, the Japanese have been struggling with this problem for 2 decades. So unknown how to get a bit to do this, really.
And just a further question, Matt, in terms of asset purchases, a QE3, a QE4, how much would you think that the Fed would need to do?
You know, honestly, I at this stage, I haven't thought through this. I think it's really more a question of making sure that people are aware that asset purchases are on the table as a tool in case we do not see inflation going back to 2% with a sufficient alacrity. I think even that, frankly, even that statement by itself would be very helpful. And then the exact nature of the purchase program, I think we'd have to, you know, you have to give some thought to that. But it's more to make sure that tool is on the table, has not been taken off just because it's been stopped right now.
For a generation that remembers the huge inflation of the 70s, why is that 2% number important to aspire to, that it should be at least at that level? What is the magic of 2%?
Well, you're balancing off as usual in economics, you're balancing off costs and benefits. And obviously having high inflation has some costs associated with it, and I won't track through those. I'll talk about the benefits of why we want to have inflation, say, above zero as being a target. Where the long-run level of inflation affects the long-run level of interest rates, because part of the reason people demand a return on their money is to be compensated for the fact that prices are growing over time. So if inflation is averaging zero, that as opposed to two, that means that interest rates will, on average, be 2% lower than they would otherwise be. That is 2 percentage points less buffer that the FOMC has to work with during the time of recession. The fact we've been one of the reasons the recession was as bad as it was that the FOMC was not able to provide as much accommodation as it could otherwise because we hit the zero lower bound. We tried to use asset purchases as a substitute, but frankly, they're an imperfect substitute. So you have to have that 2%. 2% has been judged to be the trade-off, the right point to put that trade-off between the cost of having too high inflation versus the buffer that you need to help fight recessions. Some economists have been suggesting that we should actually be raising that target more recently. That's really, if you there's definitely some perspectives out there that would actually, the 2% is if anything, too low.
Let's talk a little bit about recent oil price changes. It's actually popped up in the last couple of days. So what do you think that's going to do? I know in your talk you discussed more broadly the decline, but, you know, when we see it increasing, what do you think it means for inflation?
Yeah, I think that oil, you know, as I suggested in my talk, we try to make monetary policy. We're trying to look ahead 1 to 2 years ahead. And the movements of oil prices over the last 2 days are not really going to be material, I don't think, for that outlook. And so I don't see that kind of movement as really being significant for monetary policy choices in 2015.
With such a huge drop in oil, are you concerned that that's a sign that the economy is going to falter back into a recession or back into something more deep?
You know, I think there's, as usual, it's economics is a battle of supply and demand, and that's what you're seeing being played out in oil markets. I think part of it is that global demand, writ large, is lower than we would have anticipated. But, you know, I think there are other factors involved as well. Again, as I said, I think what we're trying to do is forecast where the outlook for growth is going to go, as opposed to where we are right now. And, you know, what concerns me more is really when I look into longer term yields on treasuries and other securities, like, you know, German debt instruments, government sovereign debt. Those interest rates are very low, and as I talked to you about earlier, David, the inflation break-evens have gotten very low. This just represents a lack of confidence that the Federal Open Market Committee, other central banks, are going to be able to hit their inflation targets, even over very long time frames. So the 30-year yield, you know, it's maybe a little north of this now, around 2.25%, 2.3%. Very, it's hard to square with a 2% inflation target being hit over that 30-year time frame. It's very low yield to be commensurate with that. So those are the signals I've been seeing that have me concerned.
What are the chances of a rate hike this year, would you say?
You know, that's a committee decision that'll have to be, argued out as we go forward or discussed. Best information you have available to you as a member of the public on that is every quarter, the FOMC, the members of the FOMC release what's called the Summary of Economic Projections, which will then contain FOMC members, participants, I should say, forecasts of where they see interest rates going over the next 2 years, really, I think 3 years, based on their views of appropriate monetary policy. And out of the 17 FOMC participants in December said that 15 of them foresaw interest rates rising off the current lower level in 2015. So 15 of the 17, that was their forecast as of December. We get a new summary of economic projections will be released in March.
Is there anything that's happened since then that would suggest to you that that number would drop as we go forward?
That 15?
The number of...
That you'd have to ask my colleagues about, yeah. I'm happy to talk about my own views on that. That, what I have seen since the time I submitted my summary of economic projections, it has not given me more room for concern on the real side of the economy. I think the real side, was proceeding as pretty much what I expected at that point. But my concern is on the nominal side. That is, what's happening with prices? What's happening with inflation expectations? It's a mistake for us to think that just because the real side is healing, that inflation will automatically go back to 2%. It is the same mistake that the committee made in the 1960s when it foresaw that just because unemployment was going to rise, inflation was going to come down. It didn't. That led to big problems when inflation expectations become unanchored and we had a real problem on our hands. We're making the mistake in the opposite. I worry that we're making the mistake in the opposite direction this time, where we think just because the economy is, unemployment is falling, inflation is going to go back to what we want it to go to. And that's, I worry about that. The signs of that in financial markets is a real matter of concern.
It seems like maybe there has been a little bit of divergence, right? So when there is action taken that you see inflation and employment move in the same direction, but it does seem like it's not quite parity right now. I mean, you're seeing some improvement in jobs, and we're not really seeing an awful lot of inflation at all. So do you think that assumption is maybe just a little bit out of whack right now?
We've had a lot of estimates of what's called the Phillips curve. So the Phillips curve is a relationship between inflation and unemployment, really originally back between wage inflation and unemployment, but price inflation and unemployment more recently. We've done some work on that here. It's a relationship that I think is a useful guide to policymaking, but one of the things you learn very quickly when you try to estimate Phillips curves is they move all around. The slope changes all the time. And so things, for example, one of the things we found in Minneapolis is we did a cross metro area analysis, which showed that the number of people who are part-time but would like more hours also influences the rate of wage inflation and price inflation, I should say, in a metropolitan area. So what does it tell us? Well, the unemployment rate alone might not be enough as a signal of what's going on in terms of wage pressures and price pressures. So this has been well known for years, that just trying to go with the Phillips curve and say, boy, unemployment's falling, therefore inflation's inflation's going to go up. You can't make that logical. That connection doesn't work. It works in the limits, right? When you go out to now we go back 6 months or a year, you go out to Williston, North Dakota, unemployment rates are below 2%. Wage growth is really high. Price growth is really high. You get out to, in the extremes, it works. But in between here, it's very hard to make forecasts just based on the Phillips curve.
Can we switch topics just real quick to international markets? Last week, the committee said that international developments are should be taken into account when raising rates. And the markets thought that was kind of bearish. Wondering what you think about that.
I think it was a reflection of realities that the committee looks at. I think it was listed in this whole list of indicators that the statement has about what we keep track of, and I think it was a modernization of the statement, is the way I put it. I would hope that Americans expect the Central Bank of the United States to be looking more broadly than what's happening at our own borders, and I think the statement reflects that now. It's good.
And is there anything specific that we're looking at when?
I think the statement was appropriately broad. We look at international developments.
When you were talking about unemployment and inflation, is there a new normal for that? Where do you see the new normal?
So, you know, that's a great question because if I was giving a talk 3 or 4 years ago, I used to get questions all the time. You know, don't you think unemployment is going to get stuck at 7% or 7.5% or something like that, and we will never get back to the unemployment rates we see right now. But now here we are at 5.6%. I think we're still, my own view, even as I look across the 9th District, I see unemployment rates that are below 4% and wage pressures remain subdued. This suggests to me that we have more room to run than we might have thought in terms of unemployment. We're still trying to find out where unemployment's going to go in terms of where it's going to be the long run consistent with 2% inflation. The fact that inflation is as low as it is and we expect to remain as low as it is tells us that we have more room to run. Sure. Yeah. Anything else?
Well, I probably do, but you go ahead.
Well, my question was, have you thought about what your plans are after next year?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about things, yeah.
Okay, then I'll jump in since that was so quick. So the drop in bond yields, my editor asked me to ask you about that, the drop in bond yields and what you think that's telling investors about the outlook for growth and future inflation.
Yeah, so I think the drop in bond yields is communicating that investors are worried about low growth and low inflation, and especially worried about them happening at the same time. And this is not some, you know, it's not some random fear on the part of market participants. This makes perfect sense. If we had low growth, then the Federal Reserve and other central banks would be hard put to provide the necessary accommodation to raise growth and to keep prices at 2% because of the constraints imposed by the zero lower bound interest rates. So if we have low growth, there's a tendency we might well expect to have low inflation and vice versa. Low inflation might be associated with low growth. That's what you see in bond yields, a concern about low inflation, a concern about low growth, but especially a concern about them happening at the same time.